Welcome back to the Niners Wire podcast. My name is Chris Biederman. Today I'm joined by Rob Lauder and our newest contributor, Jared Brown. We took a little bit of time off. A lot has happened. Obviously, the 49ers have a new head coach in Kyle Shanahan and a new general manager in John Lynch. And so, I mean, what do you guys think? What's going on with the 49ers that piques your interest right now?
It's a different time, you know. I guess you could say the positivity, the vibe, the question marks. Nobody really knows what to expect. All they were kind of left with was what Shanahan kind of had to show off with the Atlanta Falcons, and I think it's a pretty cool atmosphere to kind of watch him and John Lynch, both first timers at their job, just go about their business and build the team that they want to build, and it's pretty encouraging. I think both of them come off as very capable and very, very willing. And I'm most interested to see kind of where John Lynch goes and the decisions he makes in the draft and kind of making his stamp on the organization. Obviously, I'm interested in Kyle Shanahan, but I think John Lynch is far, far less experienced. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do.
I think overall, also, it really points to kind of the resiliency of fans who, over the last couple of years, have had to kind of sit and toil with a franchise that's just been an absolute mess. And, you know, from the top down, it's had a pretty poor manner of operating. And with a couple of swift moves, and particularly the Lynch move that kind of flew under everybody's nose, immediately kind of re-energizes a fan base that over the last couple of years has felt more or less kind of pushed aside by Jed York and his constituents that have seemed not terribly interested in public perception. So it's exciting, like Rob said, to kind of see this renewed enthusiasm and this energy and excitement about the possibilities. And I think obviously it ought to be tempered, because ultimately the roster is not in great shape and it's getting better, but it needs to continue to improve. But it's exciting that there is, or appears to be, a cohesive plan between the top people in charge.
Yeah, I think probably the most interesting thing right now is just kind of how on the other side of the spectrum the new administration or the new regime is in terms of public perception. And you know, John Lynch is all over the radio. He's on, you know, twice a week talking about a bunch of different things, and that never happened on Trent Baalke. And I think the really interesting thing is how collaborative these guys are saying they want to be with each other. Jed York obviously gave him 6-year contracts, matching 6-year contracts, and he made it apparent that that was an important thing in finding these two guys, is getting them aligned. So there isn't really a power struggle, which I think was an issue before with Trent Baalke, and you heard Jed York kind of allude to it this week on Matt Maiocco's podcast. Shout out to Matt Maiocco. You know, Jed was saying that these guys are working together and they're being really collaborative, and I think you could look at the decisions that were made over these last few seasons, and I think you could draw a line to the fact that Trent Baalke wasn't super collaborative and really was the alpha dog in the room and wasn't really willing to listen to other people to help make some important decisions. And it sounded like after Chip Kelly was fired and the residual stories coming out of that, it sounded like they didn't really get along that well either. And you wonder, you know, Chip Kelly had all sorts of baggage coming in from Philadelphia, and he was very much labeled kind of a control freak. And he kind of sat on his hands during the draft process. And there were stories saying that he really wanted Dak Prescott, but Trent Baalke, you know, took Rashard Robinson 2 picks before the Cowboys took Prescott in the 4th round, and that sort of speaks to Trent Baalke's hard-headedness and not willing to listen to other people on the roster, or in the organization, and particularly his head coach is probably someone who he should listen to, because it's Chip Kelly runs a unique scheme. The 49ers obviously needed to make upgrades at quarterback, and the 49ers didn't do that, and it cost Trent Baalke and Chip Kelly their job. So now we have a scenario where, you know, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are very outward and want to say, we're really working together, we're bringing in a bunch of different people, and Adam Peters, obviously the vice president of personnel, is a huge get for John Lynch, who's been acknowledging what he doesn't know and he doesn't have any personnel experience, so he goes and gets one of the brighter young personnel minds in the NFL, who has history with the Patriots and Broncos. And I think that speaks to the level of optimism that you guys are mentioning. So we can go through the big free agent signings quickly. Obviously, Brian Hoyer is probably going to be a stopgap quarterback who's going to be the favorite to start, depending on how this draft goes. Pierre Garçon, sort of an Anquan Boldin-like receiver. Marquise Goodwin, a speedy receiver. Kyle Juszczyk, who's a really interesting guy, who's going to be the highest paid fullback in the NFL. We can talk a little bit about him and his contract. Malcolm Smith is going to come in and play linebacker, either, you know, one of the outside linebacker spots in their new 4-3 defense under new coordinator Robert Saleh, who has a background with the Seahawks. So they're going to try to run a Seahawks-style defense, and Malcolm Smith is there on a 5-year deal that's really more like a 3-year deal with a couple dummy years tacked on the back. But, yeah, the 49ers are full speed ahead and going in this new direction, and you know, they cut Torrey Smith, they cut Antoine Bethea, they cut Marcus Martin. They're trimming some of the fat off the roster and trying to add a bunch of guys. So going into the draft, they're in an interesting spot. And what do you guys think about, you know, what they did in free agency? What stands out to you?
I thought it was solid. I mean, I really didn't see a whole lot outside of Malcolm Smith, which seemed like they paid him a little bit more than he should have got. It all seemed to make a whole lot of sense. It was, you know, I wrote that piece about how it was really clear that they were taking, that Kyle Shanahan was taking pieces that he enjoyed in Atlanta and kind of recreating that in San Francisco. And, you know, I think when your biggest contract for the most part is making Pierre Garçon the 19th highest paid wide receiver, you know, I think you're doing all right for yourself. You know, and I've always had a really, really high opinion of him. And I think he's going to come in and have, like you said, an impact that was really, really similar to Bolden's. And he's just one of those veteran guys that knows how to get open. And I think the Kyle Juszczyk contract, that caught a lot of flack just because they made him far and away the highest paid fullback, like not even close. But I think I think one of the reasons they did that, and I think we'll be going back and looking at that contract maybe next year or 2 years from now, possibly saying that they got a steal for what they paid him, because I think they plan on really, really utilizing him. You know, it was a little corny, but Lynch called him an offensive weapon. So, you know, like I said, a little corny, but I think he really means it in the fact that they're probably planning on using him a lot more than anybody thinks. So there wasn't really anything that stood out as a bad move. I think Lynch did all right for himself on his first go around.
I'd agree. And I'd say that the Juszczyk signing is in terms of positions and versatility and what he'll do is probably closer to Delanie Walker, when we really saw him being aligned in a lot of different manners and utilized in quite a few ways. The difference being that Kyle's going to run the ball more, but otherwise, in terms of what he can do athletically and where they can line him up and really the formation versatility and the formation variety that they can use because of him is going to be just continue to grow as he kind of takes, I imagine, sort of a leadership role. What I'll say as far as these contracts, and it's different than, say, a team like perhaps the Pittsburgh Steelers, who you look at and say they're competing for a championship probably in the AFC. They're, you know, every year one of the top three or four teams consistently, as long as they've got their offensive weapons and a good dynamic head coach in Mike Tomlin. The Pittsburgh Steelers each year might need to dip into free agency and say, okay, what's the one or two signings that we can make to combat what a team like, say, the Patriots is doing so that we can continue to compete for a championship and win? Whereas the Niners, on the other hand, are realistically 3 or 4 years from probably really even pushing for, deep into the playoffs. So some of these contracts, these guys aren't even going to be on the roster when it becomes a well-rounded and hopefully successful team. You need some of these veteran guys. First off, they had the money to spend. And second off, they need them more or less as de facto leaders and kind of transition stop gaps is a good term, but also tools to shuffle in this new regime. And with draft picks like they've got right now, 10 coming in this draft and beyond, you're going to hope that really you get, you know, 7 or 8 rookies a season kind of supplanting these guys on the roster as they shuffle through. So to sign guys like Malcolm Smith, who I originally kind of scoffed at the deal as well, you know, you got the money to spend, you got to find a way to do it. And some of these guys, while their on-field product may not be so eye-opening, they're necessary right now to sort of steer the ship as the team puts together a roster that 3 or 4 years from now is competing at a high level.
Yeah, like the key point was that a lot of these guys either have experience with Kyle Shanahan directly or experience in a similar scheme, or they're going to be guys used in a similar role to what Kyle Shanahan has used before in his offenses. You know, Pierre Garçon had the best year of his career in 2013 when Kyle Shanahan was his offensive coordinator, when Garçon led the NFL in receptions with 113. Juszczyk played in a very similar outside zone running scheme that was, you know, really championed by Gary Kubiak back in the day, and Shanahan went, you know, Kubiak was the old offensive coordinator in Baltimore. Logan Paulson has experience with Shanahan back in Washington. Brian Hoyer had a really pretty solid stint in Cleveland in 2014 with Shanahan before he got hurt. Malcolm Smith we touched on. I mean, the key thing is the Niners still have $71 million in cap space to lead the NFL. So whether or not you want to say they overpaid these guys, it's really splitting hairs, because these are like Jared said, these are transitional players. These are guys who are going to help the new young players learn the new scheme, and the 49ers were willing to overpay for that. And based on, you know, the state of the franchise and where they are in California with different tax, you know, income tax brackets and things like that, they had to overpay. And that's just kind of the reality of the situation. So, you know, they paid Pierre Garçon like a 1,000-yard receiver, which he was last year and was before under Shanahan. Juszczyk is interesting because, you know, he's the highest paid fullback, but if he's going to be used like Delanie Walker, like you guys mentioned, it's going to be, you know, he would be the 22nd highest paid tight end. So figure he plays 50-60% of the snaps, and if he's productive, he's going to be worth that money. So I think ultimately all these signings were justifiable. The biggest head scratcher to me, like you guys mentioned, was Malcolm Smith, but you know, just based on his production with the Raiders the last couple years, he wasn't all that good once he left Seattle. So it'll be interesting to see how good Smith is and which position he plays. It sounds like he has experience at both outside linebacker spots in that 4-3, which sets up interestingly for the draft. And Kyle Shanahan said this week, and we have a story on Niners Wire today about it. He said, you know, we're looking for we're looking for the best possible player. And obviously the 49ers pick second, and there are tons of different directions they can go, and we've hit on a lot of them on the website. But it's going to be interesting to see, because the 49ers have so many needs, but there are some players that seem like they would fit in the schemes they want to run and some players that don't. So it'll be interesting to see how all of that shakes out, because ultimately what coaches say when they get hired, you know, it kind of their thesis statement is we're going to create a scheme and we're going to find players that fit that scheme. And then when the draft comes around, they always say, well, we're going to take the best player on our board. Well, ultimately, they're going to take players that fit their scheme. They're still going to do that. They're not going to tip their hand in interviews. They're not going to give away any state secrets before the draft. So I think the 49ers do have a scheme in mind that they want to use on offense and defense, and they're going to find players that fit that scheme. And so what we've been doing is looking for players at different levels of the draft, particularly early on, and we're going to dive in to the further rounds as April goes on. But you know, with that number two pick, it's an incredibly valuable pick. There's a lot of talk about trading back. What do you guys think early on in kind of this grand scheme? How do you think the 49ers are going to use that number two pick, or are they going to trade back?
Are you sure you want somebody else to talk about Malik Hooker, or do you want to take that?
I'll let you guys go first.
Okay. Well, I think it just seems like, and like you were saying earlier, everybody beats the best player available drum going up to the draft. And obviously you do want to take the best player available, but you have to take into account your needs and your scheme and what you need as a team. You can't always take the best player available. Otherwise you end up taking three defensive tackles 3 years in a row or something like that. So you have to obviously take into account the direction you want to go with your scheme and what you want to happen on the football field. And that's why I think we've given so much attention to Malik Hooker, because if you go back and you look last season to Seattle's 4-3 defense, which is what the 49ers are going to try to emulate, they were entirely different, drastically different, when Earl Thomas was no longer on the field. And it was completely obvious. It was not subtle at all. So, you know, the 49ers are about to go into that same defense without the center fielder that they need to do it. And yeah, John Lynch has mentioned, you know, possibly moving Jimmy Ward back there, but that would be essentially his third position in 3 years with the 49ers. He's played outside, inside corner, and now he's possibly moving back to safety. And I think it would be a much smarter investment in your future to target somebody who has really only had 1 year at the position and has shown instincts that are out of this world and ball skills and stuff like that. So
one thing about Jimmy Ward real quick, I mean, people forget, and I think, you know, people tuned out late in the season last year because things were so bad. Jimmy Ward ended the season on injured reserve after breaking his collarbone, right? Like, so he's 193 pounds. If you want him to play safety, you're going to have to ask him to hit people over the middle. And he's not a big guy. He's never played it in the NFL. He's 3 or 4 years removed from playing safety, and he's coming off a broken shoulder. So I just don't know that you can pencil him into safety and feel completely comfortable with that idea, because he's struggled to stay healthy just as a cornerback. So I would argue that he's at further risking his health if he's at safety. So go on about Malik Hooker.
Well, yeah, and Ward played, I mean, yes, we all know about Brandon Marshall, but that was a long time ago. You know, I think a lot of fans are still kind of clinging on to the idea that Ward was absolutely demolished in that Levi's Stadium home opener. But, you know, Ward was good at cornerback, so I don't see why you feel the need to move him, especially when there's a draft prospect that, like, kind of perfectly lines up with where you're picking and the need and the value, best player available, all that good stuff. Now, obviously, every team's board is different. They might have him valued completely differently than everybody else in what I kind of see in him. But to me, he seems like he's up there. I wouldn't say all by himself, but he's up there as, like, a really, really good fit that matches up with value, and I think he'd bring that – you know, that deep center fielder that the defense needs. And then when I say needs, it's been very clearly shown to us from last season in Seattle how much they really need that position.
I think really they just, and it may be the 49ers' luck, but they've just got a horrible year to have the second overall pick.
The worst.
I mean, if the pick was at number 7, we're having a different conversation about, you know, 5 or 6 guys that you could take at 7 and get incredible value with. And that's what's going to end up happening, is teams like the Jets at 6 and I think it's the Chargers at 7 and then the Panthers at 8. They're going to be able to sit there, especially the Jets, and go, we're more or less going to get a top 3 player in this draft probably to come down all the way down to the 6th or 7th pick, much like they did with Leonard Williams a few years ago, just because there's no real top edge or top flight prospect other than Myles Garrett. And then after Garrett, you've got probably anywhere from probably, you know, 7 to 12 guys that you could realistically pencil in as top 10 picks. And the 49ers unfortunately sit at 2 in a year when nobody really is going to want to move up for these quarterbacks, because they don't have to move up all the way to 2 to get one. They probably only need to move up to, you know, maybe 5 if they think they should jump the Jets. But otherwise, they don't really got to come all the way up to 2. Jonathan Allen looked like he was going to draw some enthusiasm and excitement and maybe some interest for that pick. And now he's got the shoulder issue. So if you need an interior D lineman, you're not going to move up to 2 for Allen. You might move up for Solomon Thomas, but some people want to bill him as an edge, even though to me he seems like an interior defensive lineman, but he doesn't really have the anchor ability quite yet to defend the run interior. He's kind of almost realistically, in my mind, kind of a tweener. Like, you try to figure out, maybe you play him in a 3-4. But either way, that number 2 pick doesn't have the value that it's had, say, last year, when teams are going, we've got Jared Goff and Carson Wentz at 1A and 1B, however you want to look at it, and we need to get up to 1 or 2 for them.
Yeah, I totally agree. You can lump a bunch of different players in and argue that this is the second best player, which is why you probably just pick for need. I mean, I know you don't want to reach and you don't want to find the wrong guy, but it's going to be difficult to trade back unless you trade back towards the middle of that first round. And even then, you have to find a trade partner that's willing to move up. And like we're saying, if no one's really sure who the surefire second best prospect is going to be, it's going to be difficult to find that trade partner. So ultimately, you find a guy that you think fits your scheme well. And I agree with you guys in saying that it's Malik Hooker, just because from a unique aspect, like, Hooker's skills are so unique and so perfect for what the 49ers are looking for on the back end of that defense. And as Rob mentioned, like, Earl Thomas is the most important player in that secondary up in Seattle. And so if the 49ers are trying to replicate that defense, they need that deep safety. And if they don't use it if they don't use that pick in the first round, then they're going to struggle to really be able to play that single high look that they're talking about. Because I don't think Eric Reed has the range anymore to be that deep free safety. I think he's much better in the box as a strong safety. The same with Kwaski Tart. You know, is Buda Baker a guy who might be available at 34 that you could play in that role? Maybe, but he's sort of a replication of Jimmy Ward, in my opinion, a guy who might be better off suited for the slot. So really, I think Malik Hooker, just because his skill set is so unique and he has so much range, and he could really provide value to the rest of the defense by his ability to cut off a lot of deep passes and make a ton of plays and interceptions, that's incredibly valuable to what this scheme is going to be. And on Solomon Thomas, who it seems like everybody who's written a mock draft over the last 2 weeks has pegged Solomon Thomas as number two to the 49ers. I'm with you, Jared, and I was at his pro day, and I've watched all of his games from last season. I think Solomon Thomas is going to be a good player. But like you said, I don't think he's an edge player at all. And you watch him, and he does his best work against interior offensive linemen in college. And a lot of these guys, you know, in college, the best offensive lineman is typically a tackle, right? And Thomas rarely went against tackles. And when he did go against tackles, he didn't show, you know, the flexibility, the burst off the edge, the pass rushing moves that it takes to be an elite edge player. So people are putting him at number two because he ran a 4.7 at the combine, and physically he's very impressive. But ultimately, when you project him down the road, to me, he's going to be a guy that puts on 15, 20 pounds, that's not going to be running a 4.7. And ultimately, his 40 time isn't going to matter, just because I don't think he's flexible enough to play along the edge. And, you know, someone like Derek Barnett, the Tennessee pass rusher, for example, is much more natural and much better along the edges. And I think Solomon Thomas is going to be a really good 3-4 defensive end, which has a spot in this new defense the 49ers want to run. But, you know, after taking Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner the last 2 years, is that the best use of your resources? Are you going to create the best roster possible by adding another defensive lineman, or are you going to create your best roster by adding different layers to your defense? You need that deep safety. That is something the 49ers have to have if they're going to run the Seahawks-style off defense successfully. And Kyle Shanahan knows exactly how valuable Earl Thomas is, because he was able to pick Seattle's defense apart in the playoffs. He did it firsthand. So ultimately, I think the pick needs to be Malik Hooker. We're a month out from the draft. Obviously, a lot could change. They could trade back. I do think trading back would make sense, but I think it's going to be difficult to find a trade partner. And, you know, where do you go from there? Do you take Derek Barnett? Do you take Reuben Foster? I mean, these are all guys that make sense, but I think in terms of being unique, I think Malik Hooker is the most unique player in the draft, and his unique skill set lends itself perfectly to what the 49ers want to do.
Well, one of the things I thought you said there that made a ton of sense, and it was I was hit on Twitter with a lot of people saying, well, it doesn't really matter what the old regime took and the picks they made, and it doesn't matter that they've taken two defensive linemen because Lynch and Shanahan want to build their own roster. And while that is true, that is, you know, it's their own 6-year regime and they're going to do their own thing. You have to take into account what the roster has and what's been put into that roster. And the best example I could come up with off the top of my head is, let's say you had a nice car, well, maybe not a nice car if you're relating it to the 49ers, and you just kept buying new tires for it. No matter what was going wrong with the car, you just kept buying new tires. Like you just wanted to have the best tires, and you just kept buying them. And no matter what happened to the engine and whatever else would have you, you just kept buying these new tires. And that's kind of the way I see the number two pick on another defensive lineman, is no matter what's going wrong on the rest of the roster and its inability to develop, you still just keep throwing these first round picks into the same position, which, you know, don't get me wrong, a good defensive line can work wonders, but it can't solve everything, especially while the rest of your roster is reeling from, you know, a pretty bad tenure as general manager. So
I think you can look in the division and look at the Rams and say, you know, they have Aaron Donald. They drafted a bunch of really good defensive linemen highly, but it just didn't help them because they've always needed secondary players. They've always needed receivers. They've always needed, you know, until this last year, they've had quarterback issues. Like, you have to, at some point, you just have to create the best roster. You know, like, stop talking about taking the best player available and start talking about, we need to create the best roster possible, because that's how we're going to win football games.
I think any pick at two, even if it's Hooker, is going to be viewed by most as a reach, because there's just not a ton of, you know, not a ton of value taking a safety at two. But like you mentioned, that's sort of the lot they're dealing with. And if that's the player that you think is the best player out of your options, then it doesn't really matter if you take him at 2 or you take him at 8. Ideally, you get to move back to 8 and you get the extra picks and you still get your guy. But if it's just take him at 2 or take him at 8, if you get your guy, you get your guy. And his skill set, if you project it to be as a single high center fielder safety with range and ball instincts that you cannot teach, that stuff isn't, you don't come into the league and suddenly learn to cover 25 yards over the top of a 9 route. Now you might be able to do more in terms of pre-snap reads, be better as a mental processor, but you're not going to suddenly have the athleticism, the explosiveness, the hip fluidity to open up and run like that and make plays on the ball in the air. So the skills that he has are skills you can't coach up, that doesn't improve. And more importantly, he's coming as a one-year starter with this athleticism, and he's not even quite at his age where he's realistically hitting his athletic peak. So he's got a foundation, Malik Hooker, that you're looking at and going, we can build on this. If you think he's got tackling issues, we can teach him to be an efficient tackler. We can teach him to just hit run fits appropriately. And if nothing else, set edges that we need him to set so that guys like Navarro Bowman, if he can still run, or a linebacker that they might get in the second round, Raekwon McMillan, some of these guys can come clean up these tackles. We just need you to be adequate. And more than anything, show some of this range that we're not going to find anywhere else. Whether you get that at 2, 8, or 25, it doesn't really matter because this roster has so many holes. They've got to find an upgrade somehow. And if it happens with the second overall pick, then all the better for it. Let's just get some good value and hopefully he works out.
Yeah, I think that's a key point too. Like, 5 years from now, are we gonna say like, oh, they could have taken Malik Hooker at 6 instead of 2? Like, if a guy's a starter and a high level player, it doesn't matter if he fits your scheme. It doesn't matter whether you took him 4 picks too early. And to me, I think one thing that people are talking about him maybe being reach. I think a lot of that is because he's coming off surgery on his hip. He tore a labrum in his hip late in the season against Michigan, and he had a sports hernia surgery that he played with. He played with both of those injuries in that Clemson game in the college football playoff, and he still made that ridiculous interception on Deshaun Watson in the first half of that game, where he did what he did all year and covered like 40 yards of space and made an interception in the end zone. So he did that while he was hurt. So, I think if he was able to work out and participate in his pro day and do all of the physical stuff, I think a lot more people would be comfortable with saying Malik Hooker's a top 5 pick. And even that he hasn't worked out, people are still thinking he's going to be a top 10 pick without a doubt. So much is put into, draft stock and where guys are. And, well, like, if you think he's a guy, just take him.
It's the best way to look at it, and John Lynch kind of said this himself, is if you're assuming the Browns are going to take Myles Garrett, that's fine. So you cross him off the list, and you're literally looking at every single other prospect in the draft, and that's what the 49ers have to choose from. So, like you guys are saying, the reach thing, it doesn't matter. And, I mean, yeah, you don't want to take a guy that's projected to go in the second round, third round, at number 2, but you literally have your choice there of about 10 prospects, like Jared said, that all might make sense for your scheme. So just take the one you think is going to be the best, and don't sweat where you took it. 2 overall doesn't matter. As long as that person, turns into the player you think they're going to be, then it's fine. And you touched on it a little bit earlier, but I think the 49ers' best option that kind of, like Myles Garrett, I just kind of let it go unsaid, is if they get a trade, somebody that wants to trade up, you do it. And let's say they move back to, there was the story we had earlier about Carolina wanting to move up. They move back to 8. If I move back to 8, I'd still be looking to trade back, because this is one of those drafts that's so deep that, and we were talking about this earlier, is I would rather have 4 second-round picks in this draft than I would 2 first-round picks. And yes, there's the sexiness of a first-round draft pick and how good of a player they are. They're there for a reason. But, the 49ers still have 20 players that they need to put on this roster, and it would be it would behoove them so much more for them to be quality draft picks, and there's nothing wrong with the second round in this draft. It's so deep that, I'm not sure they're going to get the opportunity to trade back even once in the first round. But if you can trade back, and if you can even trade back again and get 3 or 4 second round picks, to me that's the gold mine, because then you can really start to build this roster with a good quality depth. But like I said, the odds of them being able to do that probably aren't the best. But to me, that's kind of like the best option that I really let go unsaid most of the time.
So the 49ers need, we can go through it. They need a quarterback, obviously. They could use a receiver. They could use help at all three linebacker spots. They could use help at the two defensive end spots, so the Leo and the Sam or the defensive end. They could use a safety like we've talked about. Did I mention quarterback? They could use a quarterback. So, I mean, which quarterbacks? I mean, I think the consensus is that at two, you know, Deshaun Watson, Mitchell Trubisky, Deshone Kizer and Patrick Mahomes aren't going to be guys that are going to be worth that second overall pick. But would you, and I know you, Rob, you just mentioned trading back, would you prioritize one of these quarterbacks and make sure you can maneuver to land one of these guys maybe late in the first round if that really gets you a bunch of, you know, maybe if it gets you a first round pick next year and a batch of second round picks this year, do you do that? Or, well, what's the ideal spot to land a quarterback in this draft that might have some decent guys, you know, in the second or third round too? Or do you wait till next year when maybe, you know, Kirk Cousins is a free agent, Jimmy Garoppolo is a free agent, and the rookie batch of quarterbacks is expected to be better?
I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with taking a quarterback in this draft. The top quarterbacks have still shown plenty of great stuff. It's just that they haven't shown enough stuff to be worthy of one or two overall. So I think if they got into the mid first round, this draft is much deeper defensively than it is on offense. So I think if you got into that late first round, if you were able to trade back that far, I think you do start to consider a quarterback, especially if you already had that quarterback valued pretty highly and they just still happen to be on the board. You know, I think at that point there's all the shame or whatever you have it comes off the pick, and you can kind of make that freely and let the, you know, the pressure for that quarterback to start right away probably won't even be there anymore. So if you could net some second round picks and then you're sitting there late in the first round looking at a quarterback you like, then I think, you know, that's a good investment because the draft is so deep defensively that you're still going to be able to peg some really good defensive players in the second round if that's the way it all panned out.
Jared, what's your sweet spot for a quarterback?
Well, I agree, and I'll say that for the most part, I don't know that there's a particular pick or round that I would say, you know, here's the spot where you grab a guy. And it might be some of the kind of rejuvenated fan naivete in me, but my outlook is that wherever Kyle Shanahan convinces John Lynch to take a quarterback, he's going to get the benefit of the doubt, at least from me, for the first year of that guy's contract, or the first year that guy comes into camp, because he's shown an ability to make most quarterbacks at least serviceable. So if he's going to pick a guy in the first or second round, maybe it's not the ideal choice, and I'm sure I'd probably prefer a guy like Lindley Cooker over Mitchell Trubisky at two. But ultimately, if Shanahan takes him at two, he's got to see something, and I think that he's earned more or less the benefit of the doubt. For me, it depends on where we start talking these guys. Now, if you can get Mahomes in the late first, early second, I think that's one of the best picks in this entire draft. If you can move into the third and get a guy like Peterman, I'd take him. I think that's one of the best picks in this draft. If you're talking in the fourth or fifth, any of those guys are going to be developmental prospects, and then I'd just wait till the first round. So unless they're – first round of next year. So unless they're really in love with a guy and Shanahan takes him and kind of everybody, you know, says, well, he must like him and it's Kyle Shanahan and he seems to know what he's doing, let's see how it goes. Aside from that, I would wait till probably late first for a guy like Mahomes or Watson, and otherwise I'd wait till the third for a guy like Peterman. I don't want to see Davis Webb go in the first round. I think that's such a farce. That's a joke that he's getting that kind of love, and it happens every year. But if Davis Webb is going in the first round, that means four other quarterbacks are going in the first round. And I just don't know that there's a first round need for five quarterbacks.
Well, yeah, and if Davis Webb goes in the first round, then that pushes somebody down even further, which I'm sure if the 49ers weren't able to trade back, they would love to see someone that wasn't supposed to be there early in day two.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say, you know, like, I've watched all of Mitch Trubisky's games. I'm not super high on him. I think he has upside, but I think he's kind of the ideal quarterback that goes to a team that doesn't need a quarterback right now but might down the line. I just think coming from that spread offense, so much of what he did was one-read stuff. It wasn't super complex, and I don't know how well he's going to transition to the pro game. And to be frank, I just feel like there's a Mitch Trubisky in every single draft. And, you know, maybe I'm proven wrong. Maybe he comes in and lights it up at some point. But it seems like, you know, Blake Bortles, E.J. Manuel, Blaine Gabbert, like there is somebody just like Mitch Trubisky in every single draft that comes from a spread system that is a little bit more athletic than a lot of quarterbacks in the league, has good arm talent, and a lot of people are high on, but the inexperiencing really scares the hell out of you because, as 49ers fans have seen, like, quarterbacks, it's really tough to be a consistent quarterback year in and year out because defenses figure you out. So what's to say that Mitch Trubisky is going to be really good in year two? We have no idea. DeShone Kizer, another guy who I'm not super high on, looked like one of the best prospect in years. If he would have came out last year after his sophomore season when he really lit it up for Notre Dame, and this year he took a huge step back and didn't look good at all. So you don't know if Trubisky would have done that if he would have stayed at North Carolina for a second season. And the question is, why didn't Trubisky win the starting job his first 2 years at North Carolina? Why was he on the bench? These are all questions that I think need to be answered, and I'm not entirely sure that he's going to be a quarterback picked in the first half of the first round. I would feel much more comfortable taking Deshaun Watson, a guy who's been a star, dating back to his high school days and didn't have any problem starting right away at Clemson. Played in a lot of big games, obviously won. He really tore it up against Alabama in those two national title games. So I would feel much more comfortable with him. Jared, you mentioned Mahomes. I think Mahomes is going to be, when we look back at it, 5 years from now, I think he has the potential to be the best quarterback in this class just because of his arm talent. And I know fundamentally he's super raw. He comes from a spread system that doesn't translate to the NFL. But you look at guys like, Derek Carr. I know I mentioned Brett Favre, and he plays like he thinks he's Brett Favre, and they have similar arm talent and similar skill sets. Just when you break it down, and I'm not saying Mahomes is going to be Brett Favre, but just when you look at the skill set and the recklessness that he plays with and his mobility and his kind of gunslinger mentality, that's what Mahomes reminds me of. And, Derek Carr was a late or early second round guy. He was 36 overall. Brett Favre was 32nd or 33rd overall when he was taken by the Falcons all those years back. So Mahomes, to me, sort of has that upside. If he can embrace a pro-style offense and if he isn't forced to start right away, I think he has limitless potential just in terms of arm talent. But he is super raw, and he might end up just being like Jay Cutler, a guy who always has, super promising physical traits and ability, but never really puts it together and consistently to win enough in the league. Kizer, like I mentioned, I don't know, man. Like, if you take a step back that big in your second year in college and you look that shaken mentally, I just don't know if it's going to come back for you in the pros. And, to me, he seems like, I thought he would have been the second coming of Ben Roethlisberger or Jameis Winston or one of these guys. But, to me, he looks like E.J. Manuel. And E.J. Manuel was a squeaky clean prospect coming out of Florida State in 2013 and said all the right things and was great in interviews. And John Lynch has talked about how much he really likes talking to DeShone Kizer. But to me, like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm not taking him in the first or second round. And I know that's where a lot of people think he's going. But, at 34 overall, the 49ers can get a starter caliber player. And I just think DeShone Kizer is going to be a project and almost a reclamation project because of where he's at mentally. And I don't know if he has a yips or what, but to me, just watching him work out against air, like, he's got an impressive arm, but his accuracy is an issue, his footwork's an issue. Like, I'm just not touching that. I think, if you don't get Deshaun Watson and not at two, if you trade back towards the middle of the first round, I'm fine with that. If you take Mahomes at 34, maybe late in the first round, I'm good with that. I think Nate Peterman is a really interesting prospect. A lot of people talk about him being Kirk Cousins, and I think he would fit well with, with what Shanahan wants to do. And if he's there in the third round, I think that would be a smart pick for them. So I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at, and I'm going to take a deeper dive in these quarterbacks at some point.
I would agree. I would say that, and you kind of mentioned it, that when you discuss that pick at 34, that whoever you get there is realistically on this roster and probably into the third round, they're going to be day one starters. I mean, there's needs to be filled, and you're going to be able to fill those needs, especially when you look at the cornerback class and the edge class and how deep it is. You could get it. You can get an edge player in the third round that could come in and immediately be the best pass rusher on this team. So if you're going to take a quarterback that high, I think you've got to see him as at most a 1 year project before he's ready to start. And if it's anything beyond that, and if there's any sort of trepidation there, then you don't do it, and you just wait till next year when you can make a run at one of the free agents, or you can get one of the guys that you feel is coming out and is going to be ready in the more immediate sense. But to take a guy at 34, knowing that he's a developmental project, to me seems sort of in haste, or using the pick on a quarterback because that seems to be the popular choice, when you could theoretically address edge rusher, inside linebacker, wide receiver, running back, any of those positions within the top three or four rounds and get starters, not just quality depth pieces, right? Some teams like the Patriots are going to be able to get their depth pieces with their second round pick and guys that they just go, you know, maybe he works out, maybe he doesn't. Know the 49ers with the 34th overall pick are going to get a starting player, and if they don't, they are not using that pick wisely enough, because there's that kind of depth in this class from picks, realistically probably from picks 15 to 40, they could shake out in almost any manner, and it would make sense, and nobody would think that is, you know, terribly outrageous. A guy could go 17 or a guy could go 35, and you'd say that more or less makes sense in this draft class.
Well, and I think one of the things too is, and that's a really good point, is I think even going back for the 49ers that are picking second overall, they might be able to go all the way back to the fourth round. You know, the very top of the fourth round, if you play your cards right there, you could even get a starter in the fourth round, you know, just by the way this roster's panned out. But I think one of the things we haven't hit on in a while, because it's kind of faded a little bit, is I'm sure Shanahan is very much kind of waiting to see how things unfold in Washington with Kirk Cousins. And I don't think that they need to pull the trigger too fast on a quarterback. And I think somebody like Peterman or, you know, Kaya in the third or fourth round make a lot of sense, because that's not a, you know, that's an investment worthy of the position, even if they end up being a quality backup. But I think it makes much more sense to kind of wait on the position, see if Kirk Cousins ends up walking away from Washington, because I guarantee you Kyle Shanahan will be all over that. And, you know, then whoever you took in the third or fourth round this year is now a developmental prospect behind somebody like Kirk Cousins, which is great. That works out fine. That's a good way to build your roster. And then, you know, by the time the draft comes in 2018, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch will know whether or not Kirk Cousins is leaving, or any other quality free agent quarterback. And then they'll be able to approach a quarterback draft class that's apparently, you know, for now, much stronger than the one they have here. So I think it behooves them a lot more to just kind of wait on it a little bit. Like you said, Jared, there's a ton of quality prospects in this draft. You know, it's not very top heavy, but you can, like we said, you can get starters in the third or fourth round. So I think it would behoove them to just kind of wait on it, just let things play out with the guy over on the East Coast, and then just kind of see how things pan out next year. And, you know, I'm sure that I'm not being negative, but I'm sure that they will be picking relatively high next year unless they really, really surprise us all.
Yeah, I mean, you, Rob, I'm going to plug one of your pieces that you wrote. You wrote, you know, you listed a bunch of prospects that would be available at 34 potentially. We talked about Pat Mahomes. It's looking like he's probably going to go in the first round. But, you know, someone that Jared mentioned, Raekwon McMillan, could be a plug-and-play starting linebacker, probably at the strong side, which would be a great pick for them at 34. T.J. Watt, another versatile guy who could potentially be an edge rusher in passing situations, or potentially an inside linebacker in base, sort of a Matthews light. Alvin Kamara, a running back who has starter potential, who is really explosive in the passing game. I mean, there are guys that they could get that you don't have any questions about. Whereas if you were to take a quarterback, maybe except for Watson, I mean, in my eyes, all these guys have questions, and you don't know if they're going to start from day one. So I think ultimately it would be best for the 49ers, Rob, like you mentioned, to just wait. And if they can get Peterman in the third round, or if they have to trade up into the back end of the second round to get him, then fine. As long as you get two starter quality players with those first two picks.
I'm glad you threw out the Kamara reference, just because I think that two positions, and we kind of touched on safety earlier, running back and safety are two positions on this team that are not nearly as settled as people like to think that they are. And I recognize that Carlos Hyde is a really good player when he's healthy, and I recognize that Eric Reed has been a solid player when he's healthy. But neither of those guys, at least right now, shows any sort of consistency to be on the field 16 games a season. And particularly Reed, who's coming up on some contract stuff where the team's going to have to make a tough decision and decide whether they want to keep him or not. I mean, safety, getting at least one dynamic player that can play one of the safety positions has to be a high need on this team. simultaneously running back, and after watching what Kyle Shanahan did in Atlanta with those two running backs, that's a position of need as well. And they signed Duwan Harris, and he's an exciting player, and they've got Mike Davis, who we're hoping pans out and who shows some sort of ability to create beyond the line of scrimmage. And Carlos Hyde hopefully stays healthy, and he does more than just the week one exciting runs where he has, you know, 150 rushing yards and everyone goes, is this the year Carlos Hyde becomes a, you know, top five back? And then by week 10, you're going, man, I really wish Carlos Hyde wasn't on my fantasy team. So I think those two positions are of much more need. And it really, for me, underscores a current throughout the roster, or a theme throughout the roster, that there is very few positions, or there are very few positions on this roster that are untouchable, that should be considered off limits. So don't be surprised if they go somewhere unexpected in the first couple rounds and grab a player that they think is the best athlete to come onto this team right now and start making an impact. And certainly we don't want to see something like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers selecting a kicker in the second round to replace Robbie Gould whenever he goes. But there really are, in all seriousness, quite a few ways that they could go, because there's just that – there's no problem with adding competition. So aside from guys like maybe Arik Armstead and DeForest Buckner, who should get a little bit more time, there's a lot of ways that they could go with this. There's a lot of competition that Lynch himself can breed, and that's one of the things that he's talked about, that they're going to bring in people to compete, that more or less nobody's safe. And that's not to put guys on blast, and that's not to give guys ultimatums, but that's the reality of this team, that it's got to get better, and if you're not one of the guys that's getting better, then we're going to actively look to replace you, because that's the goal here, is to win.
We had talked so much about Malik Hooker, and you know, and Jared just mentioned the safety spot, and Arik Reed in particular. One player that I think we should talk about probably briefly is just, you know, Jamal Adams. There's a very justifiable case to say that he's the second best player in this draft. He's a squeaky clean prospect in terms of his skill set. He's an enforcer. He's a strong safety. So the 49ers are going to have their choice, and it could end up coming down to these two guys. Do they want a strong safety to be sort of the Cam Chancellor of their defense? And I think Jamal Adams could absolutely be that player who could be, you know, an all-pro, if not right away, maybe by year two or year three. You know, is that going to make Arik Reed and Kwaski Tart expendable, or do the 49ers want to address the back end? Or maybe is Adams good enough to play the back end? So I think he's going to be him and Marshawn Lattimore. I think those are going to be the guys, the secondary guys, if the 49ers pick at number two, are going to be the ones that we really have to focus on. And to me, as much as I like Malik Hooker as a fit, I'm totally open to the idea of Jamal Adams maybe being the second best player in this draft and worthy of the pick, because, you know, Tart's going to be a free agent. His contract has 2 years left on it. Arik Reed's entering his fifth year option year. He didn't get a long-term extension last year, and he's going to very much have to prove he's worth a new deal on this team, or he might be a trade candidate, or, you know, they might actually, no, his contract's guaranteed, so he's probably not going to get it released. But, I mean, I think it's we're going to have to consider Jamal Adams seriously for this number two pick.
Well, and I think, too, I mean, I mentioned it a couple times as a joke, but, you know, you're not going to have to twist John Lynch's arm to select a safety, and there's two of them that really, you know, fit need and value at that pick. And one of the things I really like about Jamal Adams is when Kyle Shanahan was asked what he felt was the most important aspect of a defense, the first thing he said without hesitation was that a defense needs to stop the run. And, you know, as incredible as I think Malik Hooker is, it's Jamal Adams is where that comes in, and he's going to be the one that's in the box. Like you said, he might be able to play the deep safety, but his forte is being in the box. He has ridiculous closing speed. He's got amazing instincts. You can just watch him play, and you can tell he's diagnosed the play before everybody else, and he's already making a beeline for that ball carrier or what have you before his teammates are, and that's why he's made so many you know, tackles for loss and stuff like that. So I wouldn't see that as a reach or as a bad pick or anything like that. It's just a matter of what the team wants to prioritize. And, you know, I'm with you in saying that Arik Reed hasn't proven a whole lot. He had a great rookie season, but ever since then, he's kind of slowly backed off. And I don't think that should, him being a former first round pick, you know, 5 years ago, shouldn't prevent the team from realizing just how good Jamal Adams might be. And plus he brings that, you know, that swagger, that leadership ability, that, you know this guy's in charge when he's back there on the defense. And that's kind of an, you know, an unspoken quantity in a lot of cases, is he would just – he'd be a leader back there, and that's something the 49ers are kind of running short on nowadays.
Yeah, there's no shortage of ways that they could take this, and in many ways they theoretically should be able to get a good player and somebody that can bolster this roster. And I would just caution people to don't get too close to any of the players that are currently on the roster, and don't get too close to any of these draft guys, because there are so many options, there's so many scenarios that can play out. This is not a roster that is set in stone by any means.
Well, I think with that, that's a good place to close. We hit on a lot of stuff. I want to thank you guys for all of the insight. That was definitely super solid. We're going to hit the draft hard. It's April. We got 27 days or so, just under 4 weeks until the 49ers make that pick in the first round, assuming they don't trade out of it, which I feel comfortable in saying they will make a first round pick. But we're going to have a lot to talk about coming up, and we're going to dive into different areas of need and different prospects to look for. We're going to continue to address quarterbacks just because it's the most important position on the field, and I think the 49ers could use one. So thank you for listening, and we're going to try to bang out these podcasts a lot more often now. I want to welcome Jared officially to the Niners Wire team. He's been on with us for about 2 weeks, and he's been killing his draft content. Rob's been great as always. Shout out to Kyle Madsen, who is making a career choice. I don't want to reveal it yet, but Kyle's still going to be a part of our team, but he's just not with us tonight. But he always does great work. And I'm Chris Biederman. For Rob Louder and Jared Brown, thank you guys for listening, and we are out.